We're going to continue and finish our Exodus section of rereading the Torah. And I hope this has been a helpful study for you. And I hope that today's one is helpful as well. But I was looking at some field celebrity weddings, not out of some sort of curiosity, but just trying to think about this idea of God bringing a marriage ceremony to the nation of Israel. And there's really some tragic stories. Renny Zellweger and Kenny Chesney were married for 4 months, and then they realized that there was a miscommunication, it says, of the objective of the marriage. And it turns out Kenny didn't want to have children. He didn't want to have really what a marriage would be of being together. They were both celebrities, and they just kind of wanted to travel the world separately, and Renny didn't want that. And so after 4 months, sadly, there was a separation. And again, it's interesting. It was a miscommunication of the objective of the marriage. And then, of course, we have Nicolas Cage, who lived right around the corner from us. Not that we were good neighbors or anything, but we lived around the corner. And he was married to Lisa Mary Presley for 3 months. And sadly, they separated over irreconcilable differences. So again, we have this irreconcilable difference between two people here. And then even shorter was Kim Kardashian and Chris Humphries, who were married for 72 days, so just 2.5 months. The wedding, they received, because of the wedding, because of all the publicity, they received almost $18 million. They didn't cost that. They received that from all the publicity. And then after 72 days, sadly, they separated. Now we're looking at the nation of Israel and their relationship with God. And we've seen that they have created this marriage covenant. The nation of Israel have gone to Sinai and they've set up this marriage covenant with God. And they've agreed to the terms and the conditions of the marriage that we've been looking at in weeks previous. And we see here, this is the whole plan. If we can just try and help you see the plan a little bit. But Israel was taken out of Egypt. They were rescued from the chaos seas of the nations. They were brought into the wilderness of Sinai. And there they met God. And he was on this holy mountain, remember, okay? So this holy mountain that's quaking, that's on fire. And God is meeting with Israel there. They can't get close to him. But 70 of the elders get closer. And Moses is able to get to the very top. And there's this plan that God has. And the plan is that God is going to move from the mountain. His glory is going to move from the mountain to the tabernacle, which we looked at last time. And then the tabernacle will become that holy place. And then they would move the tabernacle. God and Israel and the tabernacle would go to this land of Canaan, which would become Israel. And the whole of Israel would become the garden. It would become this Edenic place where God was ruling as the king, where the people of Israel were the garden people living according to God's standards and rules, blessing and being a blessing, experiencing the blessings and abundance of God. But more than that, they were called then to spread this blessing to the world. Remember, Genesis 12, verse 3, in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So this is the whole plan of God from Genesis 12, when he calls Abraham, he's basically saying, I'm going to use your family to bless the nations. So again, they're moving from Sinai into the land of Canaan. Canaan's going to become a garden land. And then from there, the blessing of God is going to spread throughout the whole of the nations. That is the plan anyway, if Israel can keep to the conditions, the covenant that they made with God. So here we are now. We're going to cover this passage, Exodus 32 to 40. And we're going to finish at 3 p.m., stop for lunch, and then see you at 4 at the chapel. But Exodus chapter 32 to 40 is what we're looking at today to finish this sub-series in the book of Exodus, the reread of the Torah. Now remember, Moses is on the top of the mountain. The elders are in the garden space, the green space here, and then the nation of Israel around the bottom of the mountain, quaking and fearing. Moses has been there for 40 days, and he's receiving the image of the tabernacle. So he's going to go down back to the bottom of the mountain, build this tent, and God's going to come and live amongst them. So that's what's happening here as Moses is on the top of the mountain, and it's for 40 days. And so here we have our first little point we're looking at today is the golden calf, Exodus 32, verse 1 to verse 6. Now remember, what's the first and second commandment that they've signed up for in this marriage covenant that they've made with God? You shall have no other gods before me, and you shall not make for yourself a carved image. You shall not bow down to them, nor serve them. And after Israel received the covenant conditions, they said, all that Yahweh says we will do. We will keep the covenant. And there was a blood covenant. They entered into this agreement with God. Okay. Now the people saw, this is Exodus 32, that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain. And the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. He's been up there for 40 days. He hasn't had any water. He hasn't had any bread. He just went up to a fiery flame, earthquakes and trembling. He's probably dead up there. We don't know what's happened to him. Now look what they said. Come, make us gods that shall go before us. The first and second commandment is to not serve other gods and to not make a carven image. And here they are, after 40 days after this marriage agreement, come and make us gods that shall go before us. So we shook our head at Rennie for 4 months. We shook our head at Nicolas Cage for 3 months. We shook our head at Kim Kardashian for 2.5 months. Here is a month and 10 days. And they're saying, come and make us another god, more gods to bring us up to the nations, or up to Canaan. Now remember, who have they asked to do this? Aaron. And who's Aaron? He's going to be the high priest. He's going to be the one God chose to walk into the holy place and pray and intercede on behalf of the nation of Israel. And so they ask Aaron, the one who's meant to represent them to God, to build them another god. And so what did Aaron do? Well, of course, Aaron, being the high priest, he said, no, children of Israel, that's the first and second commandment. We're not going to break the first and second commandment. Well, sadly, that's not what happened. Sadly, Aaron said to them, break off the golden earrings and bring them to me. And he made a molded calf. Then they said, this is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt. So here we have it. Aaron, the one who's called to be the high priest, making them a god, breaking the first and second commandment already after just 40 days and organizing a feast. Aaron saw it. And he built an altar before it. Aaron made a proclamation and said, tomorrow is a feast to Yahweh. And they rose early on the next day, offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink, and they rose up to play. Now this word play, they weren't playing cricket or baseball or anything like this. This word play, it involves serious immorality. It involves serious sin, okay? Usually involved here is sexual sin. So this is sinful practice that's taking place here. Now, they're worshiping a false god. What are they worshiping? They're worshiping a beast, okay? Adam and Eve, what did they do in the Garden of Eden? They listened to the beast. And instead of worshiping the true God, they listened to a beast. And here's the nation of Israel in the garden space. Instead of listening to the true God, they're listening to the beast and they're worshiping the golden calf. And what happens every time you begin to worship the creation instead of worshiping the creator is that you become like a beast as well. And that's what's happening here. They're worshiping the beast. They're worshiping the golden calf. And here they are rising up to play, to be involved in all of this hideous sin. So like Adam and Eve submitting to the beast in the garden, like Cain who submitted to the beast at his door, like Noah being ruled by creation instead of ruling over it, the Israelites have begun to worship a creature instead of ruling over the creatures as they're called. The theme that we've seen throughout Genesis and what we're now seeing in the book of Exodus is when you forfeit Eden by rejecting God is you set up a kingdom of sin and beastliness. And we're seeing here, sadly, right here in Exodus 32, we're seeing that the nation of Israel is just like the rest of us. Sinful and rebellious and stubborn. It's easy to look at this nation and say, if I was there, I wouldn't do anything like that. But the point is that they had more privileges than you, and they sinned. So you with less privileges are just as likely, if not more likely, to sin as well. If you're reading this story and saying, what a bunch of silly people, I would never be like that, you've missed the point of the Bible. The point of the Bible is to help you see that mankind, in its best conditions, is still in need of God's grace because of our sin. Okay, so that's the point here that we're seeing. But now we're seeing, sadly, the garden people of God, the Edenic people, are breaking the rules of God. They're becoming the serpent people after all, bitten by the serpent, living like the serpent kingdoms, rising up to play. So the second thing we look at then, or just here's the, sorry, just a short image. So here we have the golden calf being worshipped in Eden, in the Eden space, by the people of Israel, while Moses is at the top trying to get the tabernacle image from God to bring them into the land of Canaan. So here then is chapter 32, verse 7 to 14. Our second point is God's anger. So they've sinned against God. They've broken the covenant. They're acting like the rest of the nations. They're showing that they're just as sinful as the rest of us. And now we have in Exodus 32, verse 7 to 14, God's anger. His bride, after 40 days, has already committed adultery. You see that? His bride, after 40 days, has already committed adultery. She's already broken her marriage vows to him. And so God is rightfully, justly angry. It's all over for them. Adam and Eve sinned in the center of the mountain garden, and here the Israelites have failed at the bottom of the mountain. And we know what happens when people sin. When they break the commands of God, there is punishment and there's anger. And so we have Yahweh said to Moses, go and get down. Now look at this. This is a beautiful wordplay between Moses and God. God says to Moses, your people who you brought out have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made themselves a molded calf. So God saying to Moses, they're your people, Moses, and they've done this. And he says, I have seen this people. God said, I have seen this people. And indeed, it is a stiff-necked people. In other words, a stubborn people who refuse to bend the neck to God in obedience. Now, therefore, let me alone. Basically, God saying, get out of the way, Moses, that my wrath may burn hot against them and I may consume them. Remember, God, as we've been looking at in the children's talks a few months back, God is long-nosed, okay? He's long to anger, but now it's got to the point where he's angry at this nation, and his anger is burning hot against them, and he's going to destroy them. Now look what he says, and I will make of you, Moses, a great nation, because he still needs to take someone from the tribe of Abraham to bless the nations, because that was his promise to Abraham. And so he said, I'll get rid of all of them, and I'll keep you, Moses, and from you and your people, I will bless the nations instead. Now look what happens. Moses pleads with Yahweh. And he says, why does your wrath burn hot against who? Your people, who you brought out of the land of Egypt. It's kind of one of those moments of like, I'm not taking responsibility for these people, God. You're the one who brought them out. They're your people, not mine. Don't give me the responsibility for these people. But it's beautiful. Moses is saying, they're your people. You've rescued them, God, not me. It's nothing to do with me. And then he says, why should the Egyptians speak and say, he brought them out to harm them, to kill them in the mountains, to consume them from the face of the earth? Oh, and then he says, God, turn from your fierce wrath, relent from this harm to your people. And then he says this, remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, who you swore by yourself, and you told them that you would multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven. And you told them that the land that you spoke of to give the descendants, they would inherit it forever. So what Moses is pleading with here is he's pleading that they are God's people. He's pleading God's character and reputation. And he's pleading in light of God's promises. He's saying, God, they're your people, not mine. He's saying, God, consider your character and your reputation among the nations. And God, consider the promises that you made in the past to these people's forefathers. And thankfully then it says, so Yahweh relented from the harm which he said he would do to who? To his people. They're his people, not Moses' people. And so he relents from the harm. Now, what we're learning here, what we're beginning to see, is that between God and sinful man, we need somebody in the middle. We need a mediator. We need someone to intercede on our behalf. And we're going to continue to see that here in Exodus. Our third point we're going to look at here is Aaron's excuse. It's found in Exodus 32, verse 15 to 27. Moses comes marching down the mountain. You think you saw your mum mad? Try seeing Moses mad in Mount Sinai here. Moses went down from the mountains. He saw the calf and the dancing. Okay, this playing, this dancing, this sinful stuff that was happening. Moses' anger became hot, and he cast the tablets out of his hands and broke them at the foot of the mountain. He broke the commandments, symbolizing this broken covenant between God and the nation of Israel. Then he took the calf, he burnt it, he ground it to powder, he scattered it on the water, and he made the children of Israel drink it. And some serious stuff happens here at the bottom of this mountain space. And then Moses said to Aaron, "What did this people do to you that you've brought so great a sin upon them?" And look what Aaron does. Aaron, who's meant to be the high priest of God, says, "You know the people, they are set on evil. I cast their gold into the fire, and this calf just came out." So remember what it said in Exodus 32, that he molded it. And yet here he's saying, "Listen, Moses, I took their earrings, I threw it in the fire, and this golden calf just came out, and they all just started worshiping it. And what was I meant to do?" Right? He's totally removing the blame. He's making excuses here, which sounds a lot like people that we've seen in the past of this story as well. Just like Adam in the garden, "The woman you gave me, she gave me, and I ate." Just like Eve, "The serpent," which, by the way, God, you made him, "he deceived me." Cain says to God, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Refusing responsibility. And Aaron says, "You were gone, the people are evil, and this calf just came out." Refusing to take responsibility for all of this. Shifting the blame to others, which is just so like us humans. Instead of receiving our own sin, instead of accepting responsibility and thirsting and hungering after righteousness, we shift the blame towards others and we live like these people. But then, beautifully, Aaron has failed to be the high priest already. He's been the high priest. He hasn't even been consecrated to be the high priest yet, and he's already a complete failure. And so Moses steps in and he becomes the priest, the one who intercedes on behalf of this people. So point four, Moses' intercession from chapter 33 to chapter 34. And we're going to just touch on some themes here. We can't look at all of this today. Yahweh says this. So Moses comes back up the mountain and God speaks to Moses and says this, "Go and lead the people to the place of which I've spoken to you." Okay, so here they are. They're not going to die. They're not going to be consumed by God's wrath. That's really good news. And they're going to go to the land. They're going to get the land after all. But look what God says. "I will not go up in your midst, lest I consume you on the way, for you are a stiff-necked people. You're stubborn, rebellious people." God has just said to Moses, "You take them on into Canaan. I'm not going with them." He's disinheriting them. He's basically saying, "We're not going to do this anymore. This isn't going to work between us. You're going to go to Israel. Moses is going to lead you. I'm not coming up with you. You're not going to be the people that I use." Now, this is tragic. This is absolutely tragic because of the Eden story that's being told here. So remember what's supposed to happen is the people of Israel are supposed to go up into Canaan with God and turn Canaan into the Garden of Eden. And then Eden is going to spread. And God's saying, "I'm going to stay put. You go up there without me." Now, if they go up there without God, what's going to happen? They're just going to become another anti-Eden kingdom, another serpent kingdom, another sinful, rebellious, stubborn kingdom. And God is going to disinherit them, just like he disinherited the rest of the nations in Genesis chapter 10 to 11. So this is really bad news. God is saying, "Go up, but I'm not going with you." But Moses intercedes. Moses is that go-between between God and the nation of Israel. And he says to God, he says to Yahweh, "Consider that this nation is your people. If your presence does not go with us, don't bring us up there, God. For how then will it be known that your people and I have found grace in your sight, except you go with us? Please don't leave us alone. Please don't let us become another serpent kingdom. Please don't make us go up there on our own. And Moses said, if now I have found grace in your sight, go among us. Even though, I love this, even though we are a stiff-necked people, and pardon our iniquity and our sin, and take us as your inheritance, take us as your nation. You disinherited the nations in Genesis 11. You're about to disinherit us. Please don't do it, God. Please take us as your inheritance. Please use us the way you were going to. Now, we missed so much there about what God, how God showed himself with the glory, how God revealed himself to Moses. But we're going to just continue through this theme here. But what we're seeing is that God is going to come. Moses asks God to come up with them. Moses, in chapter 33, that God wouldn't bring them up without coming with them. And then in chapter 34, Moses asks God again that he would come with them and take them as his people. And here we have something beautiful in chapter 5. Point 5, which is chapter 34. The covenant is renewed. The covenant is renewed. The covenant that he gave. This is why, by the way, when you read the book of Exodus, it gets a bit interesting. You read all these commandments, then you read all the tabernacle furniture, and then you have this sinful moment here. And then you go back and you read all the commandments again, and then you read all the tabernacle furniture again. You're like, why on earth am I reading it all again? This is why. Because God is renewing the covenant. God, who was about to destroy these people, didn't destroy them because Moses pleaded. God, who was about to disinherit them, didn't disinherit them because Moses pleaded. And what we're seeing here, and I know it's hard to read Exodus because of this, but what you're seeing is something really beautiful. The covenant is being renewed. God is taking them back as his people again. He's taking his adulterous bride back to his home again. And what we're seeing then is that God has not given up. Look what it says. Yahweh said, behold, I make a covenant. He's doing it again. And so remember, in chapter 30, where the covenant is given, first of all, he says, you shall worship no other gods. That's the first commandment. And here in chapter 34, the first commandment is, you shall worship no other gods. The final commandment in the covenant is, you will not boil a young goat in its mother's milk. And the final commandment, and when the covenant is being repeated, is you will not boil a young goat in its mother's milk. Why is it doing that for? Because it's telling you God has changed nothing. He's keeping the covenant the same. He's renewing these promises. He's renewing these conditions with them again. Nothing's going to change. He's going to, now get this, he's going to act as if they haven't sinned. He's going to act as if they haven't sinned and just, and almost as if he's going back into the past to repeat the covenant again with them. We're going to just scrap what happened there. We're going to forget that golden calf incident. We're going to go back and we're going to renew this commitment that we have between one another. Now, we're not going to get into this young goat milk thing today. That's not the point. The point is the first commandment and the final commandment. What it's showing is that God is staying true to this nation. He's going to keep the same conditions. So God hasn't given up on them. And why has he not given up on them? Because Moses, who at this point in time is the seed of the woman, has successfully interceded on their behalf. Moses' successful intercession leads to a renewal of the covenant relationship between God and Israel. And again, that's why the first and final commandment are exactly the same, so that you, the reader, understands that nothing has changed here. God is going to act as if that moment didn't take place. And so Moses rewrites the commandments again. Moses was back up on the mountain for another 40 days and 40 nights. The poor guy hadn't had something to eat for 80 days by this point. And he wrote on the tablets the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. So he's doing it again. God wrote the first set. Moses writes the second set because he's the seed of the woman, the successful mediator, the intercessor between God and the nation of Israel. And something really beautiful happens here. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai, Moses didn't know that the skin of his face shone while he talked with him. So when Aaron and all the children of Israel saw Moses, behold, the skin of his face shone, and they were afraid to come near him. Why on earth was Moses' face shining? What was this supposed to illustrate? Now, it's because he's seen the back end of the glory of God, but it's also because of this. Think about this. Just consider this for a moment here. Aaron was supposed to have gold here and gold all across his breastplate, across his head. He was supposed to have gold everywhere. He had all of these jewels on his chest and jewels on his shoulders. Aaron was meant to walk in there shining, but not actually shining. It's his uniform that's shining because he's the shining high priest. Moses doesn't need any garments to be the shining one. Moses is the high priest here. Moses is the seed of the woman. Moses is as close to being God as you can be as a human being. And when the true seed of the woman comes, he shines, doesn't he? At the Mount of Transfiguration, when he's shining as fully God and fully man. So we're getting a bit of a glimpse here of what the true seed of the woman is going to be, the divine one, the one who is as close to God as you can get. And Jesus is so close to God that he is actually God here. And so this is Moses coming down here shining. And it beautifully, Exodus 35 to 39, although it's hard to read, and although you've already read it in chapter 25 to 31, the tabernacle is being built exactly as is described in Exodus 25 to 31. Why? Because God, even though he said, I'm not coming with you, God is coming with them. God is going to come with Israel and live amongst the people who have sinned against him after just 40 days because there's been successful intercession. Friends, are you seeing the gospel in all of this? I really hope that you are. We are a stubborn, stiff-necked people. And if every time I sinned, God could be saying, right, that's it. I'm not living with him anymore. I'm not living in his midst anymore. But I have someone who intercedes on my behalf, more holy, more righteous, more God than Moses was, Jesus Christ, who intercedes for me. And every time I sin, Jesus is my advocate and Jesus pleads my case. And the Father and the Spirit and the Son still live within me, even though I am a stubborn and stiff-necked person, just like the people of Israel can be as well. So again, here we have it. It's beautiful. But what's happening is that it's being built just as was said. Again, telling the reader, God isn't changing, even though this great sin has taken place. And then finally, we look at the glory of God in chapter 39 to 40. It says in chapter 39 to 40, Moses looked over all the work, and indeed they had done it, as Yahweh had commanded. Just so they had done it. And Moses blessed them, and Moses finished the work. Now, all of this language is pointing back to Genesis chapter 1 to 2. Because in Genesis chapter 1 to 2, it said, God saw everything that he had made, the heavens and the earth, and all of them were finished. And God blessed creation and blessed this seventh day as well. So what's happening here is that this tabernacle that's being built is being shown to be the Eden space of God as well. Moses saw, God saw. The heavens and the earth were finished. The tabernacle was finished. God blessed, Moses blessed. It's all showing us that God is going to use this temple, this tabernacle, as his Eden space. Then the cloud covered the tabernacle, and the glory of Yahweh filled the tabernacle. So here's God coming down from the mountain to rest upon the tabernacle as he said he would. He's coming with the people of Israel. So here he is coming into that glory, as we've looked at in this furniture the last time we were here. God coming into the Holy of Holies to dwell amongst the people of Israel in this garden space. So what's going to happen? Well, even though they've sinned, the nation of Israel have come out of Egypt into the wilderness to Sinai. That God has moved into the tabernacle space. They're going up into the land of Canaan to turn it into the place of Eden. Even though they have sinned, even though they've broken the commandments, even though they've committed adultery against God, God is showing his grace and his mercy because someone has successfully prayed and mediated on their behalf. So here's just an artistic representation of the glory filling this space, filling the tabernacle. And so we end it here. But there's a problem. Moses, once that glory came upon the tabernacle, Moses, it says in Exodus 40, verse 35, was not able to enter the tabernacle because the cloud rested above it and the glory of God, the glory of the Lord, filled the tabernacle. So what's happening here? Moses was able to go into the Holy of Holies, right in the top of the mountain, and meet with God through the cleft of the rock and see the back end of God's glory. God said he spoke to Moses face to face. His face is shining because of it. And yet now that the glory has come to this tabernacle, Moses tries to walk into that Holy of Holies and he can't get in. There's a barrier now between God and Moses. So this is where we've left it. This is where Exodus leaves it. It just leaves it like that. Moses couldn't get in. Moses, who had full relationship with God, full access to him, face-to-face friendship with God, is now not able to get in. And Exodus just leaves it there. Moses couldn't get in to see the glory of God. So that's where we end it. Will Moses be the one to bring the people into Eden? Is he the true serpent crusher? Is he truly the real seed of the woman that's been promised to us? Well, we're going to finish here in Exodus, and God willing, we'll pick up sometime in the future with the book of Leviticus and continue rereading the Torah. Well, that's it, and I hope it's been helpful. I hope Exodus has been helpful. I hope it's helped you see really what the point of Exodus is all about, and it's filled your hearts with what Jesus Christ has truly come to do for his people, the body of Christ. Amen.